Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome. Welcome. 7 past the hour. Oh, we have just so much to try to cram into the next 3 hours here. I don't know if we're going to be able to do it, but we shall try. We have a moment with Bob. We have Prairie 2's report on the touching of 13,000 today. Oh, God. We have all sorts of things. We have something about the little cookie-selling brownies and Girl Scouts that I think you're going to... We'll get to that in a minute. Seriously, 47 years ago today, Malcolm Little, also known as Alhaj Malik al-Shabazz, also known as Malcolm X, was gunned down at his place of worship. Muslim minister and human rights activist. He was an advocate for the rights of African Americans. He indicted white America in the harshest terms before he made his journey to Mecca for white America's crimes against black America. Malcolm X's father died, killed by white supremacists when he was young, and at least one of his uncles was lynched when he was 13. His mother was placed in a mental hospital, and he was placed in a series of foster homes. In 1946, at the age of 20, he went to prison for breaking and entering. In prison, he became a member of the Nation of Islam, and after his parole in 1952, he quickly rose to become one of its leaders. He finally broke with Elijah Muhammad, who was the head of the Nation of Islam. And after the period of travel in Africa and the Middle East, he returned to the United States, where he founded Muslim Mosque, Inc., and the Organization of Afro-American Unity. In February 65, less than a year after leaving the Nation of Islam, he was assassinated by three members of his own group. After breaking with the Nation of Islam in 1964, he said of his association with the Nation of Islam, quote, "I was a zombie then, pointed in a certain direction and told to march," end quote. After he broke and became a Sunni Muslim, he disavowed racism and expressed willingness to work with civil rights leaders, although he continued to emphasize black self-determination and self-defense. Malcolm X, gunned down this day 47 years ago. A Republican lawmaker in Indiana. What the hell is happening in Indiana? I mean, they're just... Well, it's not just Indiana. A Republican lawmaker in Indiana was the only member of the House of Representatives in that state to refuse to sign a resolution honoring the 100th anniversary of the Girl Scouts that his comrades in the Indiana House all approved last week. Why? He claims that the Girl Scouts has become a, quote, radicalized organization that supports abortions and the homosexual agenda. Jesus God. In a letter obtained by the Journal Gazette of Fort Wayne yesterday, Representative Bob Morris informed his colleagues that, quote, he did some research on the internet and found allegations. Allegations? Oh, that must be from these right-wing insane websites. Allegations that the Girl Scouts are a tactical arm of Planned Parenthood. And they allow transgender females to join and encourage sex. Is Molly out there encouraging sex? Man. This is from the letter that he wrote. I did a small amount of web-based research, and what I found is disturbing. The Girl Scouts of America and their worldwide partner, the World Association of Girl Guides and Girl Scouts, have entered into a close strategic affiliation with Planned Parenthood. Nonetheless, Abundant evidence proves that the agenda of Planned Parenthood includes sexualizing young girls through the Girl Scouts, which is quickly becoming a tactical arm of Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood instructional series and pamphlets are part of the core curriculum at Girl Scout of America training seminars. Denver Auxiliary Bishop, of course, James D. Conley last year warned parents that, quote, membership in the Girl Scouts could carry the danger of making their daughters more receptive to the pro-abortion agenda, end quote. A Girl Scout, this asshole talking in his letter. A Girl Scouts of America training program last year used the Planned Parenthood sex education pamphlet, Happy, Healthy, and Hot. I guess we missed that one, Kathy. The pamphlet instructs young... This is still this jerk writing. The pamphlet instructs young girls not to think of sex as just about vaginal or anal intercourse. There's no right or wrong way to have sex. Just have fun, explore, and be yourself, it states. It goes on here, but that's enough. Representative Bob Morris also said the fact that First Lady Michelle Obama is honorary president of the Girl Scouts, quote, should give each of us reason to pause before our individual and collective endorsement of the organization. Oh, my God. Girl Scouts, an arm of Planned Parenthood, sexualizing. And this guy's fervent dreams, of course. I mean, can you imagine? How long do you think it'll be before they find child porn on his computer? A week? A month? Now, Indiana Republicans are keeping their distance from this freak. Representative Kathy Richardson, a Republican, spoke in support of the resolution last week and told the newspaper, quote, I guess he's entitled to his opinion. They're out selling cookies, not sex and abortions. And House Speaker Brian Bosma, Republican, now get this, said he hasn't read the letter or, quote, investigated the Girl Scouts closely, end quote. You sick bastards. You sick, sick bastards. All right, Kathy, you're a Girl Scout troop leader. Come on, confess. What are you teaching these children?
Actually, at the moment, I am wrapping up packages for the sponsors of cookies, and I have Thin Mints right here for Christopher Keller. But we are not selling drugs or abortions or hold on, I got some tape here. There we go. Or anything else that could be. What was the guy saying that we were trying to...
Abortions!
No. Well, I have second grade brownies, and if anybody's in Metro Atlanta at the Trader Joe's in Midtown this Sunday, we have a cookie booth from 1:30 to 4, and you can stop by.
Little commie Girl Scouts!
We have pom-poms and tambourines, and we are also accepting donations for Children's Health Care of Atlanta, Children on
you
the
mean
Organ
that
Transplant
African music?
List,
Tom-toms.
Pom-poms.
Oh.
And we are not giving out abortions or...
birth control!
Or having homosexual sex or handing out... You know, they're cookies, not condoms. It sounds alike, but...
This is madness. This is where we live. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in this corrupted goddamn country where some freak like this can stand up in a state legislature and say that the Girl Scouts are a threat. Please, somebody kill me now.
Upon his feet, Benny's high. I said that cat is high. Yes, it's high. Benny's high. Benny's high. Look at the
till the war is over and we're both a little older.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I'm not a liberal. Come on. You got to change that. I left liberal so far behind so long ago. Oh, well. Bridget, one of our two ethics advisors to this program, sent me an email before the program this evening. She writes, if you do anything more on this tonight, you might toss this in, this thought in. This is about the Virginia crap. Before she can get an abortion, a doctor has to perform an ultrasound. The doctor has to order it, but he's ordering something that is not a medical necessity. If it's not a medical necessity, insurance won't pay for it. Now, given this rule, only women who have plenty of money can actually get an abortion. I'm sure they'll find some way to fix that part. But for now, they've effectively put the option out of the reach of most women. Don't you just love these people? I personally think it's time for Lysistrata. Either that, or just give the Christian Taliban their own colony on the moon. Just get them the hell off my planet! Sorry! I'm so pissed I can't see straight! That's our ethics advisor, one of them. No, I understand why. Do y'all know Lysistrata? Who is the Greek playwright? Don't write to me. I should know it. But that's where the women got tired of all the war. So they just said, okay, no sex. Until you make peace. Very simple. Who did that play, Kathy? Aristophanes? Who wrote? All right, somebody. It was Aristophanes. Okay. Thanks, Susan. I think it was Susan. Was it Susan? In the chat room, the Malloy chat room, live and in your face. You ought to go there. Go to MikeMalloy.com, and you'll see a link to the chat room. All you have to do is register, and you can go. Reverend Franklin Graham. Is there a more pathetic son of a bitch in America than Franklin Graham? Can you imagine if your father was Billy Graham? Now, Franklin Graham was a coke addict by his own admission. He used to whore around a lot by his own admission. I'm not making these terms up. He was just a punk. You know, most preacher sons are punks anyway, but this guy was the sine qua non of punks. His dad was the ur speaker for God on earth. His dad made the Pope look like an errand boy. So, you know, poor old Franklin Graham grew up with that. And then he's got that crazy sister. What's her name? I forget her name. But I mean, this whole family is just absolute freakoids. I mean, they are so totally freaked out. I mean, I don't know how these people go to the toilet without wondering if God is going to approve of the way they just wiped. I mean, this is so, they're crazy. What? They are. If God's going to approve of what? I'm sorry. I lose it. Every time I see Franklin Graham, I start to shiver. It's almost like seeing a demon. Anyway, he was on Morning Joe this morning on MSNBC, and he informed everyone on that program that he's sure that Rick Santorum is a Christian, but he's not sure about Barack Obama. Or Mitt Romney. I'm not sure. He said he can't be sure about Obama because he doesn't know what's in Obama's heart. Well, I'll tell you what's in his heart, Franklin. Blood! Muscle! Fat! It's a heart, for Christ's sake! What do you mean you don't know what's in his heart? Take some science, you jerk! Take a little basic anatomy! What's in his heart? Boom, 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 boom. I don't know what's in his heart. Ah! And regarding poor Romney, Franklin informed everyone that most Christians do not accept Mormons as being true Christians. No, we don't. We are so tight-lipped and ham-fisted that we just, you know, we expect you to... Now, I'll tell you what. If you die a Mormon, we'll convert you. Oh, no, wait a minute. They do that to us. Well, this is, and you folks wonder why I do a church night or why I talk about this stuff. Do you realize what has happened in this country? What the Republican Party is fighting about? Are they going after Obama because he uses drone aircraft to assassinate people? No! They're going after him because he's a Muslim and not an American. That's why they're going after him. These people are beyond sick. They are beyond sick and into the realm of just totally crazy. Just remember what we talked about Monday night. Huh? Stripping open the id of these creatures. We'll be right back.
For the son of a preacher, man, you see what?
Attention. Back to Mike Malone.
Yeah, paying attention. 25 before the hour. Anyway, Franklin Graham is on Morning Joe on MSNBC. Poor Joe Scarborough, a redneck Republican, if ever one existed. But his party has left him so far in the dust. I mean, he can't find his ass with both hands. Well, I think I'm still a Republican. I just can't. He was one of the people that tried to engineer a coup against Newt Gingrich and succeeded. But anyway, I digress. So, Franklin Graham is on there received wisdom about who's what and where's when. Barack Obama is probably a Muslim because his father was. Not true, Franklin, you half-wit. His grandfather was. Oh, and he had to convert to that. He believed in a tribal religion. Do you know anything about that, Graham? And let's see, Mitt can't be a Christian because, you know, all that golden tablet crap and the angel moron, or Moroni or whatever. And, who else? Oh, but Newt Gingrich, he's a Christian, even though he and his old lady committed one of the cardinal sins. Thou shalt not commit adultery! Newt's good little Catholic wife. What did she do? Did she take communion during the 4 years she was boinking this lard ass before she married him? Did she take communion? Did she go to confession? Did she do our fathers and Holy Marys and or Hail Marys and acts of contrition? Did she do that? Did she go in to the confessional once a week and say, "Forgive me, Father, for I've sinned again and again and again and again, and I'm still sinning"? Ha ha ha! No, I don't think so. Callista, you're going to burn in hell. Those were not venal. Those are not menial. They're not. What are the little sins? Venal sin. Venal? These are mortal sins. You broke a commandment. You broke two. Bearing false witness. And adultery. Hell is waiting for you, Callista. And your Pillsbury doughboy husband. The jaws of hell are... But I digress again. So anyway, Franklin Graham says, you know, knowing who's who is my business. Somebody's got to know. I know. I know these things. He said he'd had no doubts about Rick Santorum. Oh, no. Of course not. Santorum Santorum is a true member of the death cult. There is no question. I'm not sure how to proceed. I come on this program every night, and I've got this stack of stuff that is presented as news items, and they are news to me. I mean, in this political season, the Republicans who have been flaying and beating and salting each other's wounds now for, it seems like, forever. And I guess we're supposed to believe that the Republicans, no matter who they finally nominate, they're all so corrupt and filthy and lying. They say that about each other. The Democrats don't have to say a word. They just go on and on. My God. Oh, this just in. Regarding the Virginia proposed invasive ultrasound law, I don't think I should give the name of this emailer, but the emailer says, as you know, the Commonwealth of Virginia Senate has approved a bill requiring women to undergo an invasive ultrasound procedure before they can receive an abortion. What you may not know is that the ultrasound transducer used to generate the imagery is actually an electromechanical vibrator. Of course, the frequency at which it vibrates is far higher than the titillating pulsations that some of us enjoy. Nevertheless, the idea of the state compelling a woman to submit to the insertion of a transvaginal vibrator for no medical reason is, well, compelling. Just saying. It comes from Huffsneck, Massachusetts. Is that it, Huffsneck? I'm just not going to say your name. I'll just leave it like that because I don't want to be responsible for anything bad happening. Vibrator? Wow. Okay. Yes?
I wonder if the Girl Scouts have a merit badge or try it for a transvaginal probe operation.
Oh, God, don't go there. Our little daughter is in the Girl Scouts. Don't, Kathy. You're a Girl Scout leader! Where are we? Oh, yeah. They did it again, didn't they? Huh? Angry. Here's the headline. Angry Afghans protest the burning of the Quran at U.S. Air Base in Kabul. We it's one thing to be an imperial force that is dying, that is twitching and gasping its last breaths on the world stage. But it's something else again to keep doing this, peeing on the corpses of Muslims, burning their holy books. What do you want? U.S. military? A goddamn invasion of this country? So they go burn Qurans. Now, before we get too terribly weird about this, just remember that the Afghan Taliban, the psychopaths on the Islamist side of this monstrously sick equation of religion, remember when they ordered the destruction of those ancient pre-Islamic Buddhist statues that existed for hundreds of years? Do you remember that? Do you remember that? The huge, where was that? I forget where it was. But they blew them up. Antiquities experts around the world were frantically sending telexes and telegrams and rocks with notes tied around them. Please don't do that. Those statues are 1400 years old. Your religion is not that old. Don't. Only Allah the Almighty deserves to be worshipped, not anyone or anything else. That was what Mullah Omar said. Just remember that Afghanistan was a Buddhist center before the Islamic conquerors invaded. Bamiyan was where those statues existed. So the crazy psycho Islamic fundamentalists have a right to destroy somebody else's sacred holy statues, but Allah forbid, or God or Yahweh or somebody, that a bunch of unused or overused Qurans are inadvertently tossed in the garbage and burned. Oh, ho, ho, ho. There's going to be death across the Islamic world tomorrow. Oh, yeah. Remember what happened the last time? When this Christian freak in Florida, remember when that rat bastard burned one Quran and gunmen stormed a UN compound in Mazar al-Sharif and killed three staffers and four Nepalese guards? Isn't religion a wonderful thing? Isn't it glorious? Isn't it beautiful? Isn't it awe-inspiring and spiritually rewarding and refreshing and makes you glad you're a human being? Franklin Graham and Mullah Omar and the rest of these psycho bastards. Oh my God. Does it never stop? Remember how the religious right in this country almost choked to death on its own bile when, during the last presidential contest, Obama made some remark about people turning to their guns and Bibles? And what? You know, it wasn't that his statement was not true. It was that his statement was too goddamn revealing for these people. Oh, you left out one thing, though. They turn to their guns, their Bibles, and their porn. That's how they get through the tough times. And this isn't even prayer meeting night. That's tomorrow. I don't know. But this stuff is coming up every day. Have you noticed this? Every single day, and it's a coordinated attack by these right wingers. Do you think it is coincidence that Santorum once again starts saying, well, you know, he says he's a Christian. I guess he's a Christian. I don't know if he's a Christian. And on the next day, within 24 hours, Franklin Graham comes out of the cave, you know, wipes the bat droppings off of his shoulders and combs the cobwebs out of his hair and blinks in the daylight and says, well, I don't know if he's a Christian. I don't know what's in his heart. I would imagine he might be. He says he is a Christian, but I'm not sure.
I ask for providence to smile upon me with his sweet face. But I'll tell you, my place is of the sun and this place is of the dark. I do not feel home.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone. It's Mike Malloy.
Is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering days and days of grass.
Girl Scouts. Girl Scouts targeted by these half-wits. Because scouting teaches little girls, starting at a young age, to be self-reliant, to be creative, to think critically, to respect the planet, to work cooperatively. How do I know? I have a Girl Scout. She's still a brownie, but already she's learning this stuff. And it's amazing. What was that little ritual that you did in the woods with them, with the mirror buried under the grass? What was that called? What was that?
That was a virgin sacrifice.
Now, come on, Kathy. What was that called?
That was the brownie induction into the brownies. You know, where you twist me and turn me and show me the elf. I looked in the mirror and I saw myself. That's a little bit where they become invested. It's called an investiture ceremony.
The only time I ever had an investiture ceremony was at a waning moon festival in the mountains in North Georgia. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I got to be a male aspect for the East, I think. I don't remember. But it was great fun. Not at all scary. The dancing around in the nude, that was fun. But you didn't do that with the Girl Scouts. That was just little kids. Yeah, okay. I get it. Yeah.
That's at the camporee.
That's at the camporee, right. It's just madness, isn't it? I mean, where's Hunter Thompson when you need him? I know he's dead. He took the weasel's way out and killed himself. That's just so we're supposed to believe. That's just not fair. You know, he said when the going gets weird, the weird get go ahead, fill it in. Creative? Christian? Huh? Come on, what's the rest of it? When the going gets weird, the weird get armed? But he's not here now. And it's weird. I'm reading two of his books right now. Two that I had not read. But I don't know. All right. We have... Now, over in the Boy Scouts, did you see this in Santa Barbara, California? A judge overseeing a lawsuit brought by the family of a California boy molested by his troop leader 3 years ago, 5 years ago, has ordered the Boy Scouts of America to hand over confidential files detailing allegations of sexual abuse by scout leaders around the nation. We're going to have another Catholic priest thing here, aren't we? Huh? Known as ineligible volunteer files. The documents have been maintained since the 1920s and are intended to keep suspected molesters and others accused of misconduct out of scouting. Scout officials have resisted releasing them and won't discuss their contents. Officials deny that the files have been used to conceal sexual abuse. Does this not sound like the Catholic priesthood? It does! So, on the one hand, you have these right-wing monsters suggesting that little girls in the Girl Scouts really represent a tactical, if not strategic, arm of Planned Parenthood, as if Planned Parenthood is some kind of a guerrilla organization out to murder Christians or impregnate all their girls and anally rape all their men. Ah! And on the other hand, you have Christian Boy Scout leaders molesting little boys! Never let someone drive you insane when it's within walking distance. I don't know who said that. Michael in Roswell. I think that's his SIG line. Is that from Michael? That doesn't sound like Hunter Thompson. That's too rational. Oh, that's right. The weird turned pro. Thanks, Bob. When the going gets weird, the weird turned pro. Yeah. And speaking of things that begin with the word Bob, we have a moment with Bob coming up momentarily. And we also have some from Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2. What else do we have? Oh, did you hear about this? WikiLeaks is banned from a UN conference on WikiLeaks. Did you hear about that? WikiLeaks has launched a strong protest with the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, for banning it from an international conference that it's hosting. UNESCO is hosting at its headquarters in Paris on the impact of the whistleblower's website's activities. And they're banning WikiLeaks. So the madness is just not here. This is just Command Central for the weirdness and the madness and the sickness. Stick around. Moment with Bob when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. What the hell is he? Economic affairs correspondent. Bruce writes, the Dow touched 13,000 today on news that the Greeks will be bailed out with another $140 billion. Of course, that money really goes to the big banks, not to Greece. The new so-called bailout will only be delivered if the Greek government complies by the end of the month with a long list of austerity measures that will ensure the continued decline of their economy. The Greeks also must prepare two state industries to hand over to the pirates by June. And the banker appointed to be in charge of their government plans to literally loot the entire country. Absolutely. Every public asset of value is being sold off for a pittance to the corporate robber barons. The Communist Party of Greece is on the rise. Their slogan could simply be, "We told you so." The president's report on the economy, President Obama, came out on Friday, and it contains an interesting paragraph. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, you see, keeps track of labor costs compared to the price businesses charge. And they chart the product of the two factors as the markup over unit labor costs. That's what it's called. The year 1947 is used as a baseline for this chart. And the graph, Prairie 2, here's one of those sentences. I have no idea what you're saying. And the graph, it doesn't historically deviate far from that line. Okay. Earnings go down during recessions, as you might expect, since employees still need to be paid while prices tend to slump and then rebound above the line in the good times when prices rise. This century, though, has been different. Starting in 2001, the line has been moving steadily upward in the employer's favor. During the Bush recession, it only leveled off and didn't decline. Since the end of the recession, the graph began moving up again, and this time it's going nearly straight up. In short, labor costs have fallen dramatically while prices have risen. This fits with my contention, Bruce writes, that the unusually high unemployment claims every week, even as jobs are being created, are from the universal and deliberate effort to replace current employees with newer, lower-paid workers. Democrats would be completely justified in calling for wage increases as a party plank. No case can be made for the fear of wage price inflation. Indeed, if wages don't rise, at some point deflation will grab hold. We've already seen it to some extent in real estate prices that continue to fall even below pre-bubble prices. Republicans, of course, will squeal like stuck pigs at any suggestion that the minimum wage be increased, or by any policy favoring the reinvigoration of unions. Slavery is the natural order of things as far as the Republican Party is concerned. And their blue-collar base just doesn't catch on. They firmly believe that if everyone else is a slave, well, somehow they personally will be better off, because it won't happen to them. They believe the stories about how teachers are overpaid and any government at all is just plain bad for them. The typical Republican voter is sure the Europeans overspend on socialism, that the whole continent looks like some gray Stalinist apartment block with weeds growing in the streets. Even if it's really America that increasingly looks that way instead. So the Dow touched 13,000 briefly today for the first time in 4 years. When the Dow bottomed out at around 6,500, the average 401k had lost an average of $51,000. Now that the Dow has recovered its value, the average 401k has recovered $25,000. Does anyone else see a problem here? The typical Republican does. It's Obama's fault. He stole their $26,000 and gave it to welfare and foreign aid and unionized teachers, and he wants to take my guns! They will never catch on that the $150 billion in bonuses that Wall Street takes every year came out of his $26,000. Bonuses that didn't slack off a bit, even when the market was at the bottom. The really sad thing is that the $26,000 loss isn't all of it. Unless you take your money out now, you will certainly lose more. No money comes into the market except from suckers buying in, no matter how high the Dow goes. But money constantly flows out to the Wall Street bankers, the traders, and the hedge fund managers. It's a rigged casino, and still the Republicans vote for it. Sadly, most Democrats don't know the difference either. Prairie2.com. You know, I'm just wondering if the Greeks are going to, the Greek people are going to continue to do this. Their government is now run by a cabal of bankers, as Prairie 2 points out, business people. These are not politicians or people with any inkling of political science. To take the cradle, and there's something highly symbolic about taking the cradle of democracy, so-called, that's what they say, the cradle of democracy, Greece, and stripping it, butchering it, turning it into what? I mean, what's going to be left? Is it going to be a collection of islands where everybody is a slave? Are the Romans coming? Are the Assyrians coming? Are the Persians coming? No. European and American bankers have already arrived. Greece. Greece, for Christ's sake. The cradle of democracy being stripped, butchered by these filthy capitalist pigs. Well, there's a little restaurant that Kathy and I frequent. It's run by a Greek family. Where are they from? Brooklyn? Where are they from? They're from New York or you know who I'm talking about. I don't want to say their name on the air.
Oh, no, they're from Connecticut.
Connecticut. Oh, okay. Well, New York, Connecticut is all the same. we go to this little Greek restaurant frequently because it is about as authentic, I think, as you're going to get in this part of the country anyway. And it's just good food. We like to go there. It's very reasonable. They like Molly. And in talking to them, as soon as you bring up the crisis in Greece, the manufactured crisis in Greece, it's amazing to see the corners of the eyes of the people, the family that owns this restaurant, start to tighten up, and the upper lips start to curl back from their canine teeth. It's like they just want to beat the living daylights out of somebody for what's going on. I mean, these are people that travel back to Greece 2-3 times a year. They're Greek, they're American citizens, but you know, not assimilated the way, you know, who wants to be assimilated? You got to hold on to something. There's no culture here. But as this situation gets worse and worse and staggers along, now what these people are saying is the Greeks will never accept this. Never. That anyone who thought the riots were bad a couple of months ago hasn't seen anything yet. We'll see. All right, when we come back, now I guess at the bottom of the hour, we'll do a moment with Bob. It's a good one. It's a time capsule. The moment with Bob tonight. The title is "I Thought My Grandfather Was Dead." Yeah? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Seekers, Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, moment with Bob coming up in a moment. Hear about this? There's a website, thyblackman.com. You've been there? Thy, thyblackman.com. The bullet-riddled T-shirt of President Obama, posted brazenly on Facebook by 7 semi-automatic gun-toting men, among them a Peoria, Arizona police sergeant, was much more than the by now standard nonstop litany of racist cartoons, depictions, web postings, and kooky loose talk threats against President Obama. We may have talked about this. This is from January 30th. The gun-toting men and the police sergeant were taking target practice on the president's likeness at an undisclosed desert locale. This is Arizona, the state where many legislators think it's okay to pack guns in the legislature and for citizens to openly carry them in public. This is the state where former Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords was nearly killed in an assassination attempt, and where a wide body of respectable opinion is starting with the finger in the face of the president by Governor Jan Brewer that openly loathes the president's policies and, in many cases, him personally. The gun-toting men made a virtual public call for the gunning down of the president. All this comes against the backdrop of Secret Service reports that the rate of threats against President Obama has increased 400% from the 3,000 a year or so under George W. Bush. He receives dozens of assassination threats continuously, and that number has been steady before and during the campaign and increased after he took office. This is a Class D felony under U.S. code. The Secret Service has taken the threats against the president seriously and has diligently investigated every one of them. In a few cases, prosecutors have brought charges. But here's the problem, in fact, several problems. How seriously do other public officials take them, especially in places like Peoria, Arizona? Officials there did not suspend the police sergeant, pending review and investigation, let alone fire him, or call for a prosecution of him or his gun-toting pals. Their weak response was, at the very worst, this police sheriff or whatever may have violated the public or the police department's employee conduct rules on the use of social media because they posted it at Facebook. Oh, man. This is why I may wind up supporting Obama. Oh, don't send me emails. I know. But you understand what I'm saying. Dear God. And the article by Earl Hutchinson at thyblackman.com concludes this way. There's nothing shadowy or conspiratorial about what Police Sergeant Pat Scheer and his gun-packing friends in Peoria, Arizona did. It was brazen and very open. The clueless Pat Scheer, for his part, saw nothing inappropriate, let alone dangerous, about what he did. He chalked it up to much ado about nothing, or as he put it, he didn't think that shooting up a T-shirt with President Obama's face on it was a real big deal. It was more than a big deal. The target in their gun sights was not a regular bullseye, a likeness of Howdy Doody, or a cactus plant. It was President Obama. Federal prosecutors should see it as the big deal that it is and bring charges. This is a good website, thyblackman.com, for Caucasians who would like to peek around the corner or lift up the curtain and see what they're talking about. You should go to this website, thyblackman.com. See what they're talking about over there. See what they're writing about. Ah, la, 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 la. All right. We have a break here, and we'll come back and I will share with you the latest essay from Bob Alexander, I Thought My Grandfather Was Dead. Now, that's an intriguing title. I Thought My Grandfather Was Dead. You'll have to just wait a couple minutes here and see what this is all about. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, Ah, there's that music. It's time once again, ladies and gentlemen, for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode is entitled, I Thought My Grandfather Was Dead. Hey, Mike, my mom's stepdad was the only grandfather I ever knew. He was a short, stout, outwardly devout Christian and looked like a Norman Rockwell American straight from a cover of the Saturday Evening Post. He and the rest of Nixon's so-called silent majority were taken completely by surprise by the 60s. The seemingly placid era of the 50s was turned upside down when Negroes forgot their place and demanded civil rights. The next thing he knew, young people defied authority and refused to support the war in Vietnam. Women suddenly seemed to lose their minds and wanted control over their own bodies. Clean-cut kids started growing their hair long and smoking dope and having irresponsible sex. This deeply disturbed millions of Americans like my grandfather, who sincerely believed sex was only safely discussed within the confines of a Reader's Digest article. I can understand his confusion and anger. At the end of World War II, there was only one colossus bestriding the globe, and that was us. We won. And we got our just reward. We were the biggest and the baddest, and we had God and the bomb on our side. Not necessarily in that order. We had the factories and the money. We had the know-how, and no matter how you sliced it, we were the good guys. The United States could do just about anything. And we were poised to do just that. All Americans had to do was go to work, cash your paychecks, and start buying the American dream as advertised on the new television sets. Well, just as my grandfather was getting accustomed to living in paradise, all hell broke loose. The aforementioned Negroes, young people, and equal rights-seeking women were essentially telling him he could take his paradise and shove it up his ass because they had a different idea about where the country should go. Grimly determined to keep his American dream, he didn't mind when they brought out the dogs and the fire hoses. When the cops attacked in Chicago and the National Guard started shooting up Kent State, he didn't mind at all. He wanted his country back. He wanted to go back to the time when we had won. He wanted to go back to the time when he didn't have to remember to say the word Negro instead of the word he had used his entire life. He wanted to go back to the time when all the women, Negroes, and children did what they were told. He wanted to go back to Pleasantville, where Ossie and Harriet and the Beeve solved their problems in under a half hour because Father knows best in a black and white world. The Republicans promised they'd get back that paradise for him, and he supported them until the day he died. 40-some years ago, my friends and I seriously wondered how far our parents' and grandparents' generations would go to preserve their American dream. When my friends talked about a revolution, I'd take another toke off the joint making its way around the room and say there was no need for a revolution. All we had to do was wait just a little longer, and everything we wanted in society would happen as if by magic. As Jeffrey Deaver wrote, "You can't see it, but it's always present. Run as fast as you can, but you'll never escape it. Fight it with all your strength, but you'll never defeat it. It kills when it wishes, but can never be brought to justice. What is it? Time. Everybody standing in our way was going to die. I'd pontificate as only the righteously stoned could. There will be no more war. There were over 8 million Vietnam-era veterans. 2.5 million of them had cycled through Vietnam. We would never allow another Vietnam to happen again. Discrimination would vanish by the time we hit our mid-30s. We were free of the racism our parents and grandparents dragged around with them. The Equal Rights Amendment would become a reality because in 1972 it had passed both houses of Congress, and we were the people who were going to vote to ratify it. The unlawful drug we were passing around would soon be legal. We were the ones who would vote to overturn all anti-marijuana laws. They might have the guns and the cops and the politicians on their side, but we had the more powerful weapon. We were going to outlive the bastards. Well, If Alan Greenspan can admit that he made a huge mistake, then I, too, can say a belief I held for about 20 years of my life was absolutely, overwhelmingly wrong. And I won't recant like that weasel. My grandparents are dead. My parents are dead. But the one glaring fact I didn't take into consideration was money never dies. I confused the minions of the elite with the elite. What the hell? I was stoned, okay? I made a simple mistake. A great, big, simple mistake. Capitalism works best when it's Ozzie and Harriet all the time. Lawrence Welk's Muzak, American Idol, Las Vegas, and shopping malls were designed to keep us unconscious. Oppression is used when the people wake up. In the meantime, the Republicans are staying on their generation's old message. They will take us back to when life was just about as good as it could get if you were a white man. They've sanctified Ronald Reagan because he told the bedtime story best. For those whose brains are only nourished on sound bites, the fable reverberates as if true. The bullies and bigots love it when their hateful ideas are expressed well via William F. Buckley and St. Ronnie. When the Tea Party showed up, it was because the Koch brothers paid for it. Billionaires pump money to keep the Gingrich and Santorum campaigns afloat. And Mitt Romney's financial backers are the who's who of big banks and corporations. Money never dies. It just seeks out new hosts who appreciate working with blood-sucking ticks. If my grandfather were alive, he would have watched Glenn Beck's Restoring Honor rally in 2010. Now I hear the tenets of the twisted Christianity he adhered to coming out of Rick Santorum's mouth. My grandfather's dead, but his place has been filled by someone else who wants to take the country back. The Republicans promise a return to a time that most American voters have never lived in. A time they believe in more strongly than the Garden of Eden. You know, my world turned upside down too. A couple of times, actually. But I never wanted to go back to any previous time in American history. I wanted to go to a possible future. My first mistake was in not understanding the undying malevolence of money. And secondly, I got the demographics all wrong. There weren't nearly enough pot smokers necessary to pull off my kind of passive revolution. As Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead said, somebody has to do something. And it's just incredibly pathetic that it has to be us. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. And by the way, if you would like what Bob has written, or Prairie 2, or Alex Baer, Alex from Oregon, who is an excellent writer, entirely different from both Prairie 2 and Bob Alexander, and now we have Alex. All three can be found, they're up now, at tvnewslies.org. Go to the editorial, click on the editorial button, and you'll find it. Pray to Bob Alexander and Alex Baer. I wonder how Bob is coming, Kathy, with the next episode of Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe. Huh? That's coming. I can't wait. Let's see, what else do we have here? Monsanto has been found guilty of chemical poisoning in France. Did you hear about this? This is about a week ago, I think. What's the date today? Today's the 21st? Yeah. Oh, tomorrow is our 15th anniversary. Oh, my God, I forgot all about it. 15 years. Good God, Kathy! So this is about
You've had shorter prison terms.
That's very true. This is about a week old. In a major victory for public health, and what will hopefully lead to other nations taking action, a French court decided today—that was a week ago—that GMO crops monster Monsanto is guilty of chemically poisoning a French farmer. The grain grower Paul Francois says he developed neurological problems such as memory loss and headaches after being exposed to Monsanto's Lasso weed killer. This monumental case paves the way for legal action against Monsanto's Roundup and other harmful herbicides and pesticides made by them and other manufacturers. Well, we'll see, won't we? We'll be right back. Before the hour, got an email here from our good friend Bob Kincaid. Head on radionetwork.com. You should be listening to him. He writes, this time it's Anne Frank. I want to vomit, Mike. At what point does one's basic instinct to remain nonviolent run up against the irresistible urge to explain to these freaks in terms they best understand that doing such things is the spiritual equivalent of necrophilia? Speechlessly, Bob Kincaid. What he's talking about is the fact that Anne Frank apparently has been baptized posthumously Saturday by a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, according to a former member of the church who is now a whistleblower, Helen Radke. Of course, you know who Anne Frank was. The ritual was conducted in a Mormon temple, apparently, in the Dominican Republic. According to Radke, a Salt Lake City researcher who investigates such incidents, this, by the way, violates a pact between the Mormon Church and Jewish leaders that was agreed to in 2010. Radke said she discovered that Annalise Marie Anne Frank, who died at Bergen-Belsen death camp in 1945 at age 15, was baptized by proxy on Saturday. Mormons have submitted versions of her name at least a dozen times for proxy rites and carried out the ritual at least nine times from 1989 to 1999, according to Radke. But Radke says this is the first time in more than a decade that Frank's name has been discovered in a database that can be used both for genealogy and also to submit a deceased person's name to be considered for proxy baptism. The database is only open to Mormons. As the Huffington Post has reported, Mormon posthumous proxy baptism has continued despite church vows to stop. Negotiations between Mormon and Jewish leaders led to an agreement in 1995 for the church to stop this, to stop the baptism of all Jews, except in the case of direct ancestors of Mormons. But Radke says she found that some Mormons had failed to adhere to the agreement. Oh, really? No. You're kidding. You mean they lied? Nah. Couldn't be. The name of Nobel Peace Prize winner Elie Wiesel was recently submitted to the restricted genealogy website as ready for posthumous proxy baptism. There's just one problem. Elie Wiesel is still alive. God. Oh, I see. He's ready for posthumous proxy baptism. Radke's discovery of another possible proxy baptism for Anne Frank follows an apology from the Mormon Church a week or so ago for recent posthumous baptisms of Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal's parents. Radke noted that the latest baptism of Anne Frank by proxy is especially egregious because she was an unmarried teenager who left no descendants. Mormon officials have stressed that church members are only supposed to submit the names of their ancestors in accordance with the agreements. Necrophilia, eating the dead, or having sex with the dead. Well, what is eating the dead? Cannibalism, I guess. Bob Kincaid is right. It is the spiritual equivalent of necrophilia. I mean, what? How? How invasive? I mean, it's invasive for a woman to be forced to have a transvaginal sonogram. It's invasive to take someone, the name of someone who has died. And contrary to what their particular belief system may or may not have been, to say, well, we're going to baptize you into the Mormon faith. No, don't. I'm dead. Doesn't matter. No, please. Just let me float out here in the infinite. No! We're going to baptize you. No. Don't. I'm at peace. Leave me alone, you sons of bitches, okay? We're going to baptize you. Come here, you slithery little spirit. No, no, don't do it. Don't do it. If you do this, I will infest your dreams. I will come into your bedroom and eat your brains. Leave me alone. Come here, you little sprite. You are Jewish, right? Yes. Well, I was. I mean, it's beyond necrophilia, Bob. What's beyond necrophilia? What's beyond having sex with the dead? Is there... Oh, I know what it would be. It would be reaching into that zone of whatever and saying, come here! No! We're going to baptize you! No! You touch me, I'll eat your hand. Just sick. Sick. Spiritual rape. When? Will there ever be a time when religious people will just, especially Christians, just go do what your Jesus told you to do? He told you not to pray in public. He told you not to make a spectacle of yourself. He said to heal the sick, take care of the poor, feed the hungry, clothe the naked. And when you want to pray to my Father in heaven, he said, go into your closet and pray. When are any of you professed Christians ever going to follow your Messiah? Huh? email from David G. in Los Angeles, part of the KTLK group. Writes, Mike, remember this last year, or last week, actually. David writes, Mike, the underwear bomber, so-called, is sentenced to life imprisonment for trying to kill Americans, even though the only one actually harmed was himself. Meanwhile, an American Marine receives no time and only a demotion for actually killing two dozen Iraqi civilians, including children. Is this an example of American morality? Quick answer, David. Yes, it is exactly. This is what it's all about. Now, the court-martial, or whatever the trial was, that the former Marine, I guess he was still active duty, where he was acquitted of the more serious charges. I don't think they even brought those serious charges against him. Part of the defense, now, usually, I don't know if it was in this case. It really doesn't matter. But the defense in these types of cases is the fog of war defense. The fog of war, where your mind is so clouded, almost literally, with confusion, death, destruction, indecision, rapid movement, snap decisions, that you inadvertently, in the fog of war, can kill people who do not deserve, so to speak, to be killed, i.e. civilians who are rounded up and systematically executed. You see, you can use the fog of war defense, even though it's hard to imagine 7-year-olds putting this Marine's life in jeopardy. However, the same defense cannot use by a religious fanatic like Muta Alub or whatever the hell his name was, the so-called underwear bomber, even though his brain was probably, no, actually more fogged with religious horse crap than the Marines. But to answer your question again, David, is this an example of American morality? It's more an example of, well, morality, but also an example of American justice. Our people can round up two dozen plus civilians who have done nothing and systematically gun them down, including children, and get nothing as punishment. Nothing. Oh, bad job, bad job, bad dog, sit, stay. Whereas an Islamic fundamentalist crazy man, his mind fogged with the fog of religious fanaticism, is sentenced to life in prison when no one was killed. Now, attempted airline blowing up, oh, well, that's very serious. And justice, I guess, has been served with sentencing this miserable bastard to life imprisonment. But what about the miserable bastard that executed two dozen? Oh, Jesus. Well, David, I'm sorry, man. There's no reason even talking about this. Is this American morality? Of course it is. Of course it is. This is why they hate us. This is why, oh, you know the drill. Deep breath. As you know, there are two, maybe you don't know, there are two big events coming up in Chicago. I don't have the dates in front of me, but there is going to be a NATO meeting in Chicago and the G8 summit in Chicago. Oh, is that going to be fun? Don't you think? Anyway, as reported by Truthout, every time a new measure that the city of Chicago is preparing for those two events is unveiled, the tension in the city ratchets up a notch. Now, the latest news, according to the Chicago Tribune, I think it's the Tribune. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Somebody's reporting it. The latest comes in the form of reports that Chicago has purchased face shields and sniper equipment and aerial surveillance, i.e. drones. God. In Chicago. In Chicago. This is part of the expanded powers given to Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Every time I hear his name, I feel like we all should get into a prayer posture. What is your name? Rahm Emanuel! Oh, start praying. Anyway, Rahm Emanuel. Rahm! I mean, that sounds almost Hebrew Egyptian, doesn't it? Like some ancient leader of Hebrew Egypt or something, or Egypt Hebrew. Rahm Emanuel! Anyway, as part of his expanded powers, he's authorized the city to accept contracts for goods or services without approval of the city council and without the competitive bidding process. Oh, Jesus. The face shields and aerial surveillance technology, that would be drones, are the first use of this allowance. First time that Rahm Emanuel, this is the first time Rahm has used his new power. City of Chicago police officers and any law enforcement the city chooses to deputize under the measure put in place for the NATO G8 events will be equipped with 3,000 new face shields that, quote, will fit easily over gas masks, end quote. Now, it's a $200,000 contract with a company called Superseer. These are just the face masks. I like that. Superseer. Rahm Emanuel orders $200,000 worth of Superseers. That's a Colorado-based company. And according to Superseer President Steve Smith, this purchase was made as, quote, an emergency purchase for the G8 summit, end quote. Mm. And according to a company called VizLink, God, I love these names, don't you? Superseer, VizLink, VizLink. According to reports, Chicago will also get the latest in aerial surveillance equipment. And that's in a press release from VizLink. VizLink. It sounds like something you ought to put in your eyes for red eye. VizLink, right? But no. This is what VizLink said. Quote, the airborne units will transmit to four strategically located ground-based receiver sites, providing citywide coverage and the ability to simultaneously receive real-time images from two aircraft for viewing at the Office of Emergency Management and Communications Operations Center. An additional three receive systems will be installed in the city's mobile command vehicles to facilitate field operations, end quote. What? What? Ground-based receiver sites, citywide coverage, real-time images, aircraft flying overhead. Beep, beep, beep. What are they looking for? They're looking for protesters! Rah! Rahm Emanuel! This is all coming in May, by the way. ABC News reports these measures will be in addition to, quote, snipers that will stand guard from above. That sounds heavenly too, doesn't it? Standing guard from above. My grandmother used to tell me the angels stood guard from above. Ha ha, Granny, guess what? No, no, no. They're snipers. Overarching security, it says here, jurisdiction for the summits, which have been designated a national security event, have already been handed over to the Secret Service. Well, what do we have here? Then we have Superseer. We have VizLink. We have the Secret Service. We have snipers that will stand guard from above. We have Chicago police and all sorts of deputies with face shields, guns, rifles, bullets, bombs, snipers, all overseen by Rahm Emanuel. Well, we all ought to try to go to Chicago in May. Eh?
Teardrops start, well, you got the phone, I'm here alone.
Redefining Anger Management. Back to Mike Malloy.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what
21 past the hour? Bada bing, bada boom. You know, in the upside down world of Rick Santorum, Jesus, what a crazy guy. I mean, just like, wow, man, like totally insane. Rick Santorum. In his world, Democrats are anti-science. Not him.
Democrats are anti-science.
Yeah, Democrats. As though Democrats all think alike, like all black people think alike, all Jews think alike, all, all liberals think alike. Yeah, right, Rick? I'm Rick. That's only true with right-wingers. You all of you are insane. But Democrats? Anyway. And by the way, he's always portraying himself as a son of laborers and so on and so forth. He talks about his grandfather who worked in the auto factories of Detroit and then the coal mines of western Pennsylvania after he came to this country from Italy. But when he claims to have come from the coal fields, it's kind of a stretch, but at least two generations, he's never worked in a coal mine. His parents' professions were psychologist and nurse. Santorum is a lawyer who spent all of his adult life in politics. Santorum has spent all of his working life in politics, right? Now, whether that's good or bad is relative to your position for viewing whether or not it's good or bad. But according to right-wingers, you are condemned! You are a demon from hell if you have spent an inordinate amount of time in Washington, D.C., because I guess that corrupts you. Well, if that's the case, Rick, that explains why you are so effed up. You are really out of your crawl space, but I digress. Portraying himself as a native son of western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio. He's a native son of two states. Of course he is. Of course he is. Santorum yesterday emphasized his heritage as the grandson of a coal miner. And he railed against environmental regulations that have diminished the coal industry in the region. Really? The regulations have, is that true? Ladies and gentlemen, he said, we need someone who understands, who comes from the coal fields, who comes from the steel mills, who understands what average working people in America need to be able to provide for themselves and their families, he said to a crowd of about 500 people. Oh, he was in Stupidville. Ohio, Steubenville? Well, I had a good friend from Steubenville, and he said, Malloy, it's called Stupidville, trust me. But anyway, in his remarks yesterday, Santorum went beyond his usual discussion of the importance of increasing domestic energy production to deliver a blistering attack on environmentalists. Ah! He said global warming claims are based on phony studies. And that climate change science is little more than political science. Do you mean political science, Rick, or politicized science? There is a difference, you dumbass. Who knows? Now, Santorum added that his views are not anti-science, as Democrats claim. Oh, no. No. He said, quote, when it comes to the management of the earth, they are the anti-science ones. We are the ones who stand for science and technology and using the resources we have to be able to make sure that we have a quality of life in this country and that we maintain a good and stable environment. Oops. You had to add that last part, didn't you? A good and stable environment? Oh, well, you must be one of these left-wing environmentalist freaks, PETA-loving, anti-fur, don't-club-the-baby-seals geeks, right, Rick? Oh, when he said all that, he got applauded. And he cited local ordinances to reduce dust coal pollution in Pittsburgh That's one of the problems. They're trying to reduce dust coal pollution, the dirty bastards! You people don't really want to breathe here, do you? No, no, we don't, Rick. No, we want Jesus. All right, then. That's an example of environmental meddling into the private lives of Pennsylvanians. You have the right, you have the freedom to breathe coal dust and die young, screaming and vomiting up your own blood. Do you understand me? Yes, Rick, we love Rick. We love Rick. Down with Obama! We love Rick! You know, I'm not going to go through what I went through last night for an hour and a half trying to explain to you how brain-dead people are who listen to this. People in western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio who die at an alarmingly high rate of lung disease. And a law is passed to reduce coal dust in the air. And these people are cheering this monstrous son of a bitch who's standing there telling them that they have the freedom to breathe coal dust. O-M-F-G. Small.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, Rick Santorum, a child of the coal fields of western PA. As you know, the economic news of late has not been quite as bleak and depressing and horrifying and red meat for these filthy Republican right-wingers in order to bring down our esteemed president. You know, the economic news has not been so bad, as we've been reporting to you via Prairie 2, Bruce Enberg, who sends us these reports. These Republican thugs and their media allies now have gone into overdrive hyping the high gas prices. And according to Media Matters, falsely assigning blame to Obama. Now, there's a way to respond to this. And I don't know if you care. A lot of people just don't give a damn anymore and have checked out. And I can understand that. Checked out of the screaming matches. What's the point? The only people who listen to my screaming is, you know, my 37 core listeners. The rest of the people who should be tuned to this screaming program are busy watching, I don't know what, Dancing with the Stars still on, or what's the other one? American Idol? But I have my little coalition of 37 really whacked out lefties. So we know about this stuff. But if you just happen to come across, like, you know, you're a typical right-winger or maybe just a typical American, you're flipping through your dial on Sirius or XM or whatever, and you have, well, it's the same thing now, Mike. Oh, okay. You're flipping through the satellite station, you come across this program, go, who in the hell is this? Well, here's something that you can, you know, carry to your next Lions Club meeting or, you know, work out at LA Fitness or wherever you go. If Republicans really cared about high gas prices, they wouldn't keep us hooked on big oil. What? What does he mean by that, Maud? And as Media Matter says, Americans want relief from the pain they're feeling at the pump, not political games. Now, what's the argument here? Well, the right wing of this country protects big oil. Rick Santorum does. All these right wingers do. Big oil, big oil. The Keystone XL pipeline that's going to utterly and absolutely stop the Earth's rotation if it goes through. Deals like that, you know, big oil profits, letting Wall Street speculators get away with driving up gas prices. We are exporting gas right now. Who was it that pointed out? Was it Prairie 2 or somebody at the Wall Street Journal, New York Times? I don't know. Somebody pointed out that U.S. refineries, gasoline refineries, are working overtime producing so goddamn much gasoline, they can't sell it here. So they're exporting it. In the meantime, prices at the pump goes up. Why is that? That's because of the Wall Street and Chicago Board of Trade commodity speculators who are saying, ha, 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 let's make a lot of money. See, capitalism will do this to you. Capitalism will gut you, will tear you to pieces, will take away your home value, will foreclose on you, will kick your ass to the curb, will tell you, here, come and buy this house, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and then give you a deal that you cannot. Just like going to Vegas. The house always wins. The gamblers on Wall Street, the gamblers in the commodity trade organizations, they win. You and I lose every single time. Bank on that, booby. So now it's gasoline. And after driving up the price with their speculators, Republicans are now trying to shift the blame. They're using the false claim that Obama is responsible. And they're promoting false solutions like, oh, I don't know, take away the gas tax or more, take away corporate income taxes, keep the subsidies for oil companies. We're saying you and I are still paying subsidies for oil companies. They're raking in billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. And you and I continue to subsidize them. This is like, you know, those old movies, old Western movies. Remember these when you were a kid? All right, partner, we caught you fair and square. Now get down there with that shovel and dig a hole 6 foot down and 6 foot long. What are you going to do? Well, we're going to shoot you. Oh, you are? Yeah, dig your grave. All right. So the guy gets down there and starts digging a grave. When he finished, boom, they shoot him. He falls into the grave. They cover him. But that's it. That's what you and I are doing. We're digging our own graves with this craziness. Subsidizing oil companies that are killing the earth. And contrary to what some religious freak might have told you, I don't care if they're Jewish, Muslim, Christian, I don't give a damn what religion, there is no afterlife. You are not going to float off and play harps and wander around in white robes and smile at the face of your avatar. You're not going to do that, truth seeker. When you die, you're going to go like this. Boop. So anyway, we subsidize the people who are killing us. That doesn't seem to make sense, does it? I don't know. The truth is that oil, U.S. oil production is the highest in years, and gas prices right now are lower than at the end of Bush's second term. Did you know that? The recession that the Republicans helped cause sank gas prices just as Obama took office. So, of course, that's the misleading starting point that they're using. Now, they also make that's the argument that gas prices have doubled since Obama took office. Well, I guess in crazy land, in upside down world of these right wingers, at the end of Bush's reign, when the country was going straight into depression, gas prices came down to what? $2.02 a gallon? $2.10? $2.12? But what is it now? Well, you see, Obama's policies have doubled gas. No, Obama's policies haven't. Unless you take a look at Obama's policies regarding Iran, and those aren't Obama's policies, those are corporate America's. Oh, never mind. Anyway, the other argument is that the Keystone XL pipeline will lower gas prices. Actually, Keystone will allow big oil to manipulate the supply of oil in that region, driving up gas prices. Where have you heard this before? Remember when they were talking about deregulating the cable television industry and all that other crap, how it'll be so cheap. Is your cable service, your satellite service cheap? Huh? Whenever you have deregulation, price goes up, quality goes down. Now, you want to make an argument about that? Go ahead. Go ahead. An independent analysis not funded by the oil industry shows that the Keystone XL pipeline would raise gas prices in the Midwest by 10 to 20 cents more per gallon. Even TransCanada, the company sponsoring the Keystone XL pipeline, admits that foreign oil companies would make an extra $2 to $4 billion per year off U.S. consumers at the pump. Where do you think, you know, that woman who wanders around your television set dressed in black, whoring for the American Petroleum Institute, and that's what she's doing. I don't care if it's a man or a woman. She is whoring for the American Petroleum Institute, the one that tells you, oh, 1 million jobs will be created, especially by if we extract oil from the tar sand, or they don't, from the Canadian sands. That's how they say it. Oil extracted from the sands in Canada. Oh, sands in Canada? Really? They have sand up there? Oh, I didn't know they had sand. Oh, that sounds pretty interesting. Yeah, that sounds innocent. Oh, okay. Taking oil out of sands. Well, that means they don't have to dig deep holes. Yeah, right. They don't have to go offshore. That's correct. They just get it out of the sand. See how that works? And the genii who write those commercials, those institutional ads, know exactly how to manipulate our minds to the point where we hear what this woman is saying and it just doesn't register. If it does register, it's a little fleeting. Oh, sand. Oh, I remember sand. I used to play in sand in the sandbox. Ooh, sand at the beach. Sand, 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 sand. And it's gone. The real horror of extracting oil from the Canadian tar sands pits is gone. What are you left with? Sand. Ooh, play sand. Oh, shovel, scoop, beach. Ooh. With the Keystone XL pipeline, big oil will get billions. Foreign countries will get the oil. Don't forget that this is not going to America. This pipeline terminates in a duty-free export zone in Texas. What does that mean? Does that mean it's going to come back to your local gas station? No! It means it's going where the money can be made. India, China, Europe, Africa, not here. And gas prices will go up. We'll be right back. Before the hour. So the only way, really, and you know this, true seekers, you know this, the only way to bring oil prices down, gasoline prices down, is to kick our dependence on oil. Get rid of it. Oil companies are raking these record profits. I mean, every time you open the paper lately, another $20 billion, another $40 billion in their filthy pockets. They're now charging us up to $4. It's going to go higher per gallon of gas and blah, blah, blah. Okay, this is just going to continue. So how do you do it? You get off the dependence on oil. So instead of protecting big oil at everybody's expense, what's the answer? Invest in cleaner, safer sources of energy that'll put millions of people to work, won't ever run out, like, say, solar power, wind power, geothermal power. What else we got? Tidal power. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But you want an example? The wind industry is predicting massive layoffs, according to the Chicago Tribune, and stalled or abandoned projects are popping up after a deal to renew a tax credit for wind production failed in Washington last week. A tax credit for wind production to produce energy failed last week in the Republican-controlled House. Now, you never read that. You never read about subsidies for oil companies, a depreciation, a tax breaks. You never read about that failing, but here it is. The Tribune says the move is expected to have major ramifications in states such as Illinois, where nearly 14,000 megawatts of wind projects, enough to power 3.3 million homes per year, are now going to just sit there waiting to be connected to the electric grid. Many of those projects will be abandoned or significantly delayed without federal subsidies. You see how this works? Of course you do. Of course you do. So happens that Illinois is home to more than 150 companies that support the wind power energy. At least 67 of those companies make turbines or components for wind farms. You know where this business is going to wind up now, don't you? Of course, China. Chicago is the U.S. headquarters to more than a dozen major wind companies who wanted to take advantage of powerful Midwestern winds and the fact that wind power could be fed into the electric grid right there. So people speaking for the wind industry fought hard to strike a deal this week in Washington that would have included an extension of the production tax credit, which provides an income tax credit of 2 cents per kilowatt hour for the production of electricity from wind turbines. The answer to that? No! No! The tax credit doesn't expire until the end of this year, but in order for developers to receive it, they must have their turbines up and running before year's end. So do you want to gamble? Huh? Supposing you were somebody looking to put your $50,000 that you inherited from your grandfather into a business? Wind turbines? Hey, that's the future. Either that or planetary death. So, sure. Now, what do you want to do? Do you want to go ahead and put your money in and see if the oil industry snuffs you out? Or do you want to just sit back and wait in the meantime the wind turbine industry goes kaput? What do you want to do, booby, huh? But this is how we're, you know, the Republicans are always talking about, the right-wingers, I should say, are always talking about, well, you know, the Obama administration won't give us tax credits, so we can't do jobs. You know, the Obama administration won't do this, we can't do jobs. So when there's a chance to extend legislation that would do just that, the Republicans respond to the real masters. In this instance, the capitalists who are gutting the planet in the oil industry, the same people that back Rick Santorum. Santorum stands there in Pennsylvania and tells people that the federal government is forcing them to breathe clean air, or trying to. And everybody knows that Pennsylvanians should have the right to breathe air loaded with coal dust. This is just as insane. This is the same kind of stuff right here. Here you go. Industry consultants, people who understand the wind turbine business, say new capacity is likely to drop to lows this country hasn't experienced since 2004. And contributing to the bleak outlook of this industry, competition from cheap natural gas. Huh? Fracking! Let's rip the goddamn country asunder to get at that natural gas, because it's cheap, and oh boy, are we going to make a lot of money. But wind power? Solar power? Nah. That's some of that tree-hugging environmentalist crap. We want to be able to not only breathe coal dust, we must have the freedom to breathe coal dust. We also must have the freedom to have pollutants and poison and arsenic and toxins in our drinking water. The Bible says we have that right. When does this ever stop? Somebody help me. Somebody help me, please. I feel like James Brown at the end of a concert. Someone help me, please. Drape my cape around my shoulders. Get me off the stage. Take me home. Let me suck my thumb. Let me cry. Oh, amen. I can't take... Don't you ever feel that way? Huh? When does this stop? When... quick answer. When life on Earth ceases to exist. I don't know. This is madness. I mean, it's just total madness, isn't it? Another thrilling evening with the Molloy program. Hey, booby, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy. Premiering Thursday.